right, welcome back to the relaunched Sports Illustrated NBA podcast, which, as you may have noticed, is now on the Open Floor feed. So we will be here podcasting from this feed moving forward. So if you are listening here, please subscribe to the Open Floor feed. We're going to give you new episodes regularly throughout the rest of the NBA playoffs, the offseason, next season, and hopefully well beyond that. You can also check out video clips of the show on the SI YouTube page. We're going to try to do a lot more of that moving forward. You know, some of these shows are going to be shorter, but we are going to be doing a lot more of them. For some, I will have a guest. Some will be just me. But we will react to all the news right here on the Open Floor feed. So, joining me for this episode is Brian Scalabrine, the former NBA forward, now a broadcaster with NBC Sports Boston, NBA Radio. Scal and I get into the off seasons ahead in Philadelphia and Orlando, two teams that have big decisions to make when it comes to how they are going to spend their available cap space. We look at which Los Angeles team is better positioned moving forward, and we look ahead to the Celtics-Cavs series that begins on Tuesday night in Boston. Dive into some of the key questions for the Celtics as we begin the second round of the playoffs. That conversation is coming up right now on the Open Floor podcast. All right, Brian Scalabrine joining me now on the show. Scal, always appreciate you hopping on, especially as I restart this show after about a month and a half hiatus. And before we get into basketball stuff, man, as a adopted Bostonian, did you catch any of the Tom Brady roast on Sunday night?
So first of all, I'm not really into like people eviscerating people, right? That's a that's a weird thing to me. I'm not really into it. Like people would come at me and I always, bark back. But at times a little uncomfortable, but also pretty freaking funny along the way. And the jokes and, you know, like it is funny how the New England Patriots used to run their thing and everyone didn't really say anything. And then it was like open season on the Patriots and Tom Brady and everybody else. I thought that was pretty funny.
I'd say two takeaways I had from the roast. One was I found there were probably 50 different ways Rob Gronkowski was called dumb during that roast. And, you know, from a more serious point of view, the Bill Belichick, Robert Kraft relationship remains frosty. That is a frosty relationship. There was an attempt there by Kevin Hart late in the show to bring them together, have a shot, and Belichick looked like he wanted nothing to do with it.
Yeah,
he wanted no part of that. So that was my big takeaway from the roast. All right, I want to get your take on a few things here, and I want to start with a couple of teams that were knocked out of the playoffs over the weekend. Philadelphia, they get knocked out. Terrific series against the New York Knicks. I think the point differential in that series was one in favor of the Knicks, and that was a back-and-forth series from start to finish. The Orlando Magic, who just couldn't find a way to win on the road. They get beat 4-3 by the Cavaliers in Game 7 in Cleveland. Both these teams have quality talent. Philadelphia's got the ex-MVP. They've got Tyrese Maxey. The Magic have Paolo Banchero, Franz Wagner, whole bunch of good young players. When you look at these two teams, and by the way, both have cap space going into this offseason, which one of these two teams do you think is better positioned for the next few years, Philadelphia or Orlando?
Like when you say few years, like I can only kick the can down the road with Embiid for like 2 years, right? I don't know what 3 years down the road looks like. If you ask me three plus, I'd say Orlando. How are they going to mess that up? They got incredible size. They got a great player. But next year, it's like that's like not an easy thing to add on to with Orlando. Who is the perfect guy? Do they want to go with, you know, shooting? Is that their problem? You know, when you think about guys and the way they shot the three in that game against Cleveland, is it veteran leadership? Like I tell you what I would do. I know that like there's a lot of people that are linking Paul George to a lot of places. To me, Paul George is a perfect fit for Orlando, but I haven't even heard that rumor at all. I think those guys would look up to him. This generation, by the way, loves Paul George, like more so than like what you would say, like people who have been around the NBA for a long time or even in the media. But I don't know if he'll go there. Maybe the weather, the tax, whatever that might come into play. But you have to think if Daryl Morey and the Philadelphia 76ers want to win right now, you have to think with Maxey, who has a cap hold of a lot less than he's going to make, Embiid, they have a couple picks. maybe the Philadelphia Sixers in the short term could kind of fix their I don't want to call it a Tobias Harris problem, but they've always seemed to point the finger at Tobias Harris, how he wasn't a great fit for that team. Maybe they can find the perfect fit for that team. It doesn't have to be free agents. You can also trade into space. There could be some right now. You see all the great veteran players who are sitting at home. So maybe those guys want to go team up with a Joel Embiid. You never know how guys think. You know what? Let me team up with that guy. I know I can help him win. And I really, there's not a player in the NBA that doesn't respect or love to watch or enjoy Tyrese Maxey. So win now, the Philadelphia 76ers. But 3 years from now, they signed the right guy. Orlando Magic could be a problem for the NBA.
Yeah, I think Philadelphia is the better positioned team right now for all the reasons you laid out there. Embiid is still in the prime of his career, finished the season, banged up, and that's always going to be the question with him, like how he gets through a regular season and how well or how healthy he's going to be in the playoffs. But we saw Tyrese Maxey take a big jump this year, and I think he can take another one next year. I mean, I think you could be talking all NBA first team next year, like in the MVP conversation the next couple of years. I think there's still room to grow for Tyrese Maxey, and that's only going to benefit Embiid as he starts to play better. I think the question for both teams is specifically with Paul George. How aggressive do you get in going after Paul George? Now, anyone that signs him is going to have to give him the 4 years, $220 million, or maybe even work out a sign and trade with the Clippers to give him a little bit more in terms of years. Would you be nervous if you were either team about going all in on Paul George, who is, I believe, what, 34 years old at this point? Maybe, I guess he can't go 5 years in a new deal, but 4 years, $220 million for Paul George. Will you be at all anxious if you're either team about doing that?
What I'm trying to convince him is, why don't we do a 3-year player option for third year and, you know, give him that flexibility, right? Anytime you're going down the road at that age at 4 years, you never know how a guy's going to age. But you could tell him, like, listen, you could also opt out after year two and get something big later. Like, you can get another deal after this, which could be more money for you. You know, like, one thing about these players nowadays, whether it's their diets, their workouts, they don't play through a lot of injuries anymore. And these guys are playing a lot longer than before. Now, are they in the prime of their career? Probably not. Does Paul George give the Orlando Magic a chance to win a championship in the next couple of years? Probably. So the idea that you have a chance, maybe there's not another guy you can sign to give you that opportunity. And maybe the Magic want to be in that. And maybe Paul George doesn't have to carry the load that he had, that he would have to do if he went to Philadelphia, or it just could be a good fit for him. So I would be hesitant at 4 years at that age, especially with the guy with injury history, but I probably wouldn't be hesitant at all with 3 years and a player option for the third, and give the guy a chance if he wanted to opt out and sign another 2-year deal. Maybe you can convince him of that. But, you know, when it comes to nowadays guys, and LeBron is kind of like breaking the mold, like, look how good he is, and he's 39. And he's going to – like, LeBron could be good for 3 more years after that. I kind of feel like if you ask me about Kawhi Leonard, I'd probably say no, but Paul George, I'd probably say I'd be okay with that for both teams.
If it came down to it, I wouldn't blink if I was either team at giving him the 4-year deal. Because, yeah, wow, there's a risk on the back end of that deal. No question. Paul George could get hurt. Paul George could be a diminished player. But I think that's the roll of the dice you have to take if you're both teams. I kind of like it in a way. It's not apples to apples. But the deal that Minnesota made to get Rudy Gobert, right? Like, they knew they were on like the precipice of something. They had good players. They needed something else. They gave up a lot to get Rudy. It looked like a disaster in year one. This year, looking pretty good. Rudy Gobert and Kat have played well together, and it looks like if they succeed at a championship level, Rudy Gobert is probably going to have a big part of that. The Orlando Magic, Scal, have a 2-year window here where it's before their contracts, their books blow up, right? Like, where you have to give Banchero big money, Jalen Suggs big money, Franz Wagner big money. You got to use that capital. And I've seen some people out there say, all right, well, you can spread it around, right? You can give some to Klay Thompson. You can give some to Buddy Hield. You can get some and more shooting that way. Okay, fine. But Paul George, even if he's not the absolute perfect fit with that team, he still addresses a lot of their issues. To your point, he's a veteran in that locker room. I think Paul George can push them into the NBA Finals. Like, given that I believe that so many of those guys in that team are going to get better, I think that's a risk worth taking if you're the Orlando Magic. Similarly, if you're Philadelphia, like, you got 2 years here. Like, I don't know what Embiid's body is going to look like, you know, at age 33, 34. I think he's probably going to break down even more at that stage. You've got Maxey. You've got Embiid. You throw Paul George in that mix. Yeah, you're going to have a bunch of minimum guys probably on that team because they're going to have to gut their roster to clear that $60-ish million in cap space. But to me, on day one that you're allowed to do it, if I'm Philadelphia and if I'm Orlando, I'm making it perfectly clear that 4 years, 220 is not a problem for me. I would give both those teams, I would give to Paul George.
Yeah, I could say this. I don't know if Orlando with Paul George right now would beat the Celtics, but I know Orlando is not blowing an 18-point lead against Cleveland on the road. Like, Paul George is not going to let that happen. You can see their inexperience kind of kicked in. Now, those guys are going to get better. Orlando is going to get better, but – you know, having a veteran like Paul George would be a great signing for them. And I know they're going to go after Klay Thompson. They're going to go after some other guys. But, you know, all eyes, in my opinion, if Orlando really wanted to, should be at Paul George. And you never know, like, weather can come into play, you know, like the Orlando
Taxes,
Magic.
As you said.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that could come into play. Orlando's like a soft market in that sense. Like, they're not going to get killed on the radio if you don't play well. It's not L.A. where it's nationally covered. And when you don't play well, you know, like, it's exposed. But Paul George can have a 3 weeks where doesn't play a week, plays bad for two, and no one's going to talk about it. And that's probably a good thing in a way for them. And then in the playoffs, can he be a difference maker? But I was all in on Orlando 2 years ago when I saw him come into Boston and beat them back-to-back games.
I remember that.
Dude, this is a real problem because they got size and they got guys that can handle. And I kind of like the way their team is built. I'm a big believer in just big size and, you know, multiple people can bring the ball up and multiple people can run pick and roll. So I really like their team. Yeah, I would definitely go after them. But let's say they don't get him. I don't actually know what I would do if I was the Orlando Magic, because you want to make sure the guy you bring in is better than like a bunch of average players, right? You want to, like, Paul George to come in, and we saw this with Kevin Garnett when he came into Boston. Kevin Garnett made Paul Pierce and Ray Allen work harder, which in turn make the rest of us work harder, right? They were pushing to be the main guy, the best player, all that. Everyone was pushing the envelope up because Kevin Garnett's just he's a maniac and he works so hard. So I think if Paul George, known as a guy, you know, works hard and puts the time in, it'd be interesting for those guys to see that. And the level that those guys can go to, which internal growth is important when you're a young team. Everyone thinks like it happens just on a linear line. Not like guys coming in make a big difference. I could just use the example of all we hear, and I think you've spent time with USA Basketball, is Kevin Durant, his influence on Anthony Edwards, Jason Tatum, whoever, right? And Kobe Bryant, and you watch the Redeem team. Like, when those guys saw Kobe Bryant, you know, they were coming in after hanging out all night, and then Kobe Bryant's going to work out, they all started looking at themselves like, wait a minute, this is what he does? Okay, I could do that too, right? So you bring guys in there that set the bar. Like, sometimes young, talented players actually don't know how hard they can work. Kevin Durant has been that guy. I think Paul George would be that for Orlando as well, which would help the internal development.
Yeah, and if there's an identity right now in Orlando, it's defense, right? And
for sure,
Paul George could slide right into that identity. He could be part of the solution there defensively, as well as being an answer to their problems on the offensive end. I don't know if you can make the same case for guys like Klay Thompson, guys like Buddy Hield, some of those other guys who are good shooters, but, you know, Klay's not the defender he used to be. Buddy Hield's not a great defender. I mean, I just think in terms of two-way players, Paul George is the perfect fit for the Magic. So, Scout, I'm out here in Los Angeles right now, and there's no basketball being played. I'm looking around. I mean, you know, Staples Center, Crypto, whatever it is, no games scheduled right now. That's
go to Venice Beach. There's some.
I know, but the Lakers.
Get some of those games.
the Lakers and the Clippers are done for the season. The Lakers, they get eliminated early in the postseason by Denver. The Clippers, they got knocked out by the Dallas Mavericks, and that's two big market teams who spent a ton of money on payroll this year, gone fishing after the first round of the playoffs. So, as you look at the Lakers and Clippers, it's the same question with Philadelphia and Orlando. Who is better positioned moving forward, the Lakers or the Clippers?
I got to be honest with you. I don't know what the Clippers do. Like, it's weird. Like, you can see Lakers, at least they have Anthony Davis and LeBron James. And both those guys have been pretty healthy this year, right? And I don't mind the pieces that the Lakers have, right? When you look at the Clippers, you're like, where are they going? If they lose Paul George, don't tell me you're going to count on Kawhi Leonard. Like, I'm done with that. Like, I don't mind, like, we'll see. And there was points in time this year when I was like, man, Kawhi Leonard can win the MVP the way that he's playing when the Clippers
January,
won.
February looked like it.
He was nasty, right? But then it's the same old story. So I'm not like, I'm never going to co-sign them at this point. So, and I don't know, like, Ballmer obviously has a ton of money, right? He has probably more money than any owner in basketball.
Oh,
right?
By so far. Yeah.
Maybe it doesn't matter to him. Like, I don't know what $100 million, I don't know what that looks like to him. I don't know what kind of splash he wants going into a new building, but this is really a Steve Ballmer question. You want to buy and pay for a new team? You can. You can sign James Harden back. You know, Russell Westbrook, you can opt in, and maybe you can give Paul George the max, right? You already have Kawhi Leonard, 3 years, $152 million owed to him coming. So maybe just keep running it back and selling that they're going to be good. So I don't mind that they get T. Lou back, and they have a really good team. It's all based off health, and there's a good chance that Kawhi Leonard's hurt again and they lose in the first round. So I don't know what his appetite is for that. I don't know what their rebuilding process, where they owe all their picks to Oklahoma City. I have no idea what they look like. And not only do they owe picks, but I think they owe some swaps. And it looks like Oklahoma City's going to be pretty good for a long time. So I don't actually – I think Ballmer would just say, all right, it's cost me a couple hundred million. Maybe I lose $60 million. Fine. Let's just sign these guys up, and I'm okay with that. And – we'll sell the fact that we could burn a new building and everyone's going to be so excited, and we'll see if they stay healthy. But, you know, it's really an appetite for them. For the Lakers, unless LeBron picks up and leaves, they'll still be good and they'll be relevant. You know, I don't think it was Darvin Ham's fault, but it was weird how right after the in-season tournament, it was always these key words, right? We don't communicate, coach. What's the other one? Disorganized. Pointing the finger at the coach. There was a lot of finger pointing going on. I don't understand the lineups. That's a coach thing, right? And it happened, let me see, the in-season tournament ended in January.
December.
That was happening late February, and they were already blaming Darvin Ham. So they'll get a new coach in, they'll sell it, and we'll see if LeBron and AD stay healthy, and we'll see who's they're pointing the finger at the following year.
Yeah, I think the answer to the question is – it's the Lakers, and it's not really all that close. I'll get into the Lakers in a moment. But, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. If you're the Clippers and you run this whole thing back and you expect something different, you're insane. Like, the last 4 years, Scal, Kawhi Leonard has missed all or parts of the postseason. That's four consecutive years dating back to the torn ACL he had in 2021. He's a guy that gets injured. I know he played a lot of games in the regular season, more minutes per game than he played since his days in San Antonio, but you know, you can't be shocked when he comes up lame in the playoffs. It just happens with this guy. James Harden, traditionally, annually, great regular season player, comes up short in the playoffs. That was an abomination of a game five that he played at home. And, you know, then, you know, couldn't get the job done in game six. I give him credit for the way he played early in that Dallas series. Game four, he was brilliant, pulled their fat out of the fire in Dallas to give them, you know, that series tie. But then when it came down to it, once again, James Harden doesn't deliver in the postseason. You can bring this team back. There's no doubt about it. They can give Paul George the full max, which is clearly what he's looking for right now. You can give James Harden a big, fat contract, the kind of contract nobody out there is willing to give him. Scal, you look at the market for James Harden. Tell me the team he goes to if the Clippers don't bring him back. Like, are the Spurs knocking on his door? Are the Pistons making a phone call? Like, I don't see what the market would be.
Don't sleep on signing trades, right? Wouldn't you think but that there's...
There were plenty of chances for teams to trade for James Harden. They didn't do it. The Clippers are the only ones that are interested.
Yeah, but I just think there's a lot of bad teams right now, like teams that are like looking to just shuffle the deck, right? Reshuffle it up. I might be wrong. I might be wrong, but
Portland, like Portland just decided their assistant coaches were the problem. That was like, I mean, what team is out there that is looking at 37-year-old James Harden and saying that makes sense for us? Like that's a good idea.
In a weird way, I'm not trying to make news. I really am not, but like the Phoenix Suns are like in a disarray. I think.
Oh man.
I think somehow it's like maybe trade a bad for a bad and make a good, something like that.
But
like,
I go back to the definition of insanity. Harden and Durant in Brooklyn. It didn't work, you know, for a number of reasons. But sorry, James Harden, by the way, 34 years old, turns 35 this summer. The point still remains. He's on the back end of his career. He's done a great job, I think, evolving as a player over the last couple of seasons, not being just the ISO guy in Houston, becoming more of a playmaker in Philadelphia and in the Clippers, with the Clippers. I give him credit for that, but I don't know what you do in a situation like that.
What is their alternative, the Clippers? They don't have other options.
They don't.
It's not, if you have your pick, you can tank. Man, every day, Sam Presti, I wake up and I always wonder, where am I at? Because I travel. And what am I doing? You travel a lot, too. Sam Presti must wake up every morning and be like, man, why do I feel good? Oh, yeah, I got all the Clippers assets. That must be, like, always – like, his wife could be on him about doing this, doing that, doing everything, his kids, whatever. And, like, it doesn't matter. Like, he can get called by the principal. His kid can punch a kid out. It doesn't matter. I got the Clippers assets. Everything is good. Like, it has to feel like that, right?
Can I just make this one point off topic about Sam Presti? All these organizations that spend a gazillion dollars on payroll with nothing to show for it. I'm talking about teams like the Suns, the Clippers, the Lakers, among others. Why is nobody calling Sam Presti? Like, why is nobody looking to extract him from Oklahoma City? Why is nobody saying, here, Sam, here is a blank check with my signature at the bottom. You fill in the number and come bring back our team. Because that's a guy in a small market that built a finals team 12 years ago and has now built a team that looks like it's going to be a perennial powerhouse for the next 10 years. Like, lots can change, of course. I get that. But that's a team with a whole bunch of guys under the age of 25 that look like they like each other with huge upside. Chet Holmgren and Jalen Williams are both going to be stars. That is a big three that they're forming in Oklahoma City right now. It boggles my mind, Scout, that nobody is offering Sam Presti $100 million a year to run their organization. You're spending it anyway. You're spending it on overpriced free agents. Why not spend it on the guy that knows how to build a team at the highest level? I don't get it. I think
a lot of teams don't have an appetite to lose like that. Like, when he had Al Horford, they were like 500.
Yeah.
They shut him down. You know what I mean? Like, and Al says nothing but great things about the organization. So it's like he just has such a master plan, and he's not going to deviate from that. And I really thought last year that they were going to tank again and try to get Victor Wembanyama. And last year they were just too good. Like, those young guys coming in, and they didn't have Chet, but it didn't matter. Like, they were just too good. But I really thought like he looks at Wembanyama, but I think he probably looked at the rest of the draft and said, Let's just move forward. Let's just move forward with this group right here. We're good enough as we speak right now.
But they haven't scouted, like, to the point about losing, like, they haven't lost at like a Pistons-like level, right? They had 2 years where they were sub 25 wins. After that, they were above 40 in each of those years. So they haven't like blown it up and torn it down in ways that we've seen other teams do it, like the way the Spurs are currently immersed in some losing. Like, they've kept some level of winning up over the last couple of years. Anyway, that's a bit off topic. I want to pivot back to what I would do if I was the Clip. Like, frankly, the best course of action for the Clippers is to, and they can't do it now because they gave Kawhi that contract, but to kind of reboot the whole thing. I understand you got swap rights, you got picks going to Oklahoma City, and you've got a new building opening up. You want to sell tickets for that building, but I don't see how running it back gets them to where they want to be. I don't see that at all. Now, the Lakers, they can't run it back either, right? They tried that. They did that this past offseason. I got it. It made sense. You want to keep continuity. That's important in the NBA, but it didn't work this year. They do have the ability to make a swing this offseason. They've got some movable contracts, and on draft night, they're going to have as many as 3 first-round picks that they can deal. I think the Lakers are going to be in deep conversations with the Hawks all offseason long.
Because you think whether Trae Young?
Either Trae Young or DeJounte Murray. We both know the Hawks going to break that thing up. They don't. It doesn't work. Like it just it. Even at their best, they weren't winning games at a high level. I think they're going to break that up this offseason. And Trae Young kind of makes some sense there. What's their big problem in L.A. right now? It's shooting. They can't score the ball in key moments. Trae Young is not his three-point shooting is not great necessarily, but he is a scorer, and he has been a shooter at times. And I even take DeJounte Murray. I think Murray as a two-way player is terrific. Do you think that adding Trae Young or DeJounte Murray to that mix gets them to what level? What level does that get them to in the Western Conference?
They're not better than Denver or Minnesota and probably not Oklahoma City. So, like, listen, I was – okay, let's do the oral history of this year at the end of the year. Denver wants the number one seed, and they blew that game to San Antonio. All of a sudden, they fall to two. Then the Lakers are in a weird situation where they got New Orleans to get into the play-in, and they end up having to match up against Denver. I don't know. I might be crazy, and I know people might look at this, and it's in revisionist history. I feel like the Lakers would have beat Oklahoma City. I think their size would have been a real problem against Oklahoma City. But Oklahoma City just dusted up New Orleans, and all of a sudden the Lakers, for whatever reason, are playing Denver, the worst matchup possible for them. So they lose, and they're going to overreact to all these things, but they lose to Denver. So, like, Trae Young ain't going to help you beat Denver? Like, there's nobody out there besides, like, Kevin Durant that will help you beat Denver. So I don't know what they can do to get over Denver. And then, come on, man, let's be real. Tim Conley, that's your boy, man. He's done a great job. That squad is built. Jaden McDaniels, and not just Anthony Edwards. Forget Anthony Edwards, Rudy Gobert, Cat, like Mike. Naz Reid is a problem, and Jaden McDaniels is an NBA problem. If you're a coach in the NBA, you're like, and Mike Malone said it after game one, you guys are all hyped up about Anthony Edwards. That dude's nasty. There's nothing more I could do about that. Naz Reid going off, Mike Conley going off in the second half, and Rudy Gobert scoring what he did, and he's a problem. So those three guys are winning that game one. Who knows what happens throughout the series, but that squad is built, and it's built the right way. So there's nothing right now I see in my mind besides going out there and getting like a Naz Reid for the Lakers where they're going to be able to beat Denver or Minnesota. So you can throw out whoever you want. None of those guys are making a difference against that team right there or those two teams.
Yeah, and all the teams you mentioned, the common thread is homegrown talent. It's Oklahoma City developing their talent through the draft. Minnesota added some pieces, Conley, Gobert, but the core of that team built through the draft. Denver built through the draft. I mean, that's kind of how you succeed. You take your lumps along the way, you lose some early round matchups, and then you break through the way the Nuggets did last year, the way the Thunder and Timberwolves are trying to do this year. I mean, that's the formula for success in the NBA. And I just don't think in today's NBA especially, where there's so many limitations for the free spenders now, where you lose your exceptions, you lose your ability to do dollar for dollar or to take on more money than you're giving out. There's just so many roadblocks to just buying a championship. I don't see either one of those teams succeeding at that level. All right, last thing for you. I want to talk about the series you're about to start in Boston, where the Celtics and the Cleveland Cavaliers are going to face off. The Celtics will enter the series without Kristaps Porzingis. Doesn't sound like he's going to be ready anytime soon. Is Porzingis' absence an issue in the series against Cleveland?
I don't think so. Not against Cleveland. Like, we have a lot. We have a size advantage over them across the board, wherever you want to look at it. Love Donovan Mitchell, the way he's playing right now, but he has to do that against, you know, Drew Holiday or Derek White or Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum. Like, Donovan Mitchell, he is an anomaly. I don't understand. The dude is legit 6'1". How does he play like he's 6'8" out there, right? He plays so much bigger than what he is. So, I don't think like he'll be able to like navigate 89 points in the last two games against Orlando. I wonder if the Celtics defense will be fine, but they do have an advantage with Porzingis out. The Celtics do have – I mean, the Cavs do have an advantage. Jared Allen plays, Evan Mobley plays. Like, that, their front court is an advantage. But they're not an advantage in which they can just, like, punish you to death. Like, they're in a weird advantage. Like, They kind of play off Garland and Mitchell. So I think the Celtics will get through Cleveland. I think it'll be a six-game series. I think Cleveland and Donovan Mitchell is good enough to win two games. But if you ask me, like, let's just say Porzingis is out moving forward, the Knicks series could be a problem because Porzingis dominated the Knicks this year. His size negates the Mitchell Robinson, Isaiah Hartenstein. People got to understand, those two guys pounding the glass, man, with Joel Embiid out there, they almost got every offensive rebound. And then Josh Hart crashes the glass too. So I'm actually really excited about the Indiana Knicks series, but if the Knicks were to get through and Celtics were to get through, I hope Porzingis would come back for that.
Yeah, especially with Brunson, you know, out there, you know, in the paint, you want to have a shot blocker, and Porzingis is really the Celtics' only shot blocker on that level. I do agree with you. I think if there's a series that the Celtics can get away with Porzingis being out, it's probably this Cleveland one. You know, the Jarrett Allen injury to Cleveland, that's a factor too. Apparently, he's in a lot of pain still with that rib injury. We'll see what he's able to do, you know, going into this game on Tuesday. But I think the Celtics' experience, their matchups, like you talked about, the defensive ability of Holiday, White, even Jaylen Brown going up against Donovan Mitchell, I think they're going to give him a lot of problems without having to send multiple defenders. They'll have to do anything creative necessarily defensively. So I like this matchup a lot for the Celtics, even without Porzingis. The other question I had for you about Boston is with respect to Tatum. You know, maybe it doesn't manifest itself in this series against Cleveland, maybe even not next round against the Knicks or the Pacers, but you get to the finals and you're going to be going up against a peer, whether it's Denver, Minnesota, you know, whoever it is that comes out of the Western Conference. You look at some of Tatum's numbers when it comes to clutch time performance. And this season, he was about 36% from the field during the, quote, clutch time minutes, 33% from three. That has, you know, given license to some people to say, that's not a guy that, you know, can win a game for you in the fourth quarter. That's a guy that's not on the level of the Jokic's or the Anthony Edwards or some of these other guys that are, quote, superstars in this league. Do you think Tatum, I don't want to call him asset or liability because it's not a liability, but how big of an asset do you think Tatum is in end-of-game situations? And is that a potential issue for the Celtics?
So I get to watch every game, right? So, Yes, you're right. Like, I lived through that with – there's a lot of times that Joe just leaves it kind of open, right? I don't know why. He has a master plan with everything he does, right? It's like, okay, I'm going to let these guys figure it out. I'm going to let these guys grow through this, whatever. But every time we looked a little shaky in a game and then we had – let's just say it's weird because we have a close game and we don't have another close game for 15 games later, right? But every time we had a close game, then we had another one – it was always like Tatum with the ball and then like great organization, more structure, and then Tatum going to work, making the right play. And I think those are the days he was better. So when people ask me, what do you think about Tatum? I'm always like, I feel like the Celtics are better in the last 2 minutes when they're organized. I actually feel like they're better throughout the game when they're, and this is not a, it's not a negative term, it's a positive term, disorganized, like kind of random, playing just at a, you know, making plays versus calling plays. But I felt like Joe this year said, okay, I tried it one way. It didn't work. Now I'm going to try it a different way. And that different way was always like, ball moves a little bit, finds Tatum. Let's say there's about 12 on the shot clock. There'll be another action. He might make that read or he might go to work at that point. But he has the ball in his hands with a live dribble. That's better than dribble, 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 way, you know, dribble, dribble, step back or something like that. So my hope would be that the numbers in those close games will improve. And my hope would be that Joe Mazzulla organizes Jason Tatum. But you're right about this, Chris. We have not been great. Like, if you take the whole season, we have not been great in those clutch moments. And really, we've been really bad in a tight game with a minute to go. With the exception, if you get a chance, if you ever want to watch what I was talking about, and you can watch it all on League Pass, like, go to the Phoenix game and just watch the last 2 minutes. Tatum had the ball. We were really organized, and he made every play. Hopefully we see in a playoff series with the time and the preparation and all that, more organization down the stretch.
Yeah, look, there are numbers, too, that suggest Tatum is good in closing minutes. Look at the playoffs the last couple of years. Last season, 44.5% from the field. That's okay. The year before that, 50% from the field in clutch time minutes. The year before that, 100% in clutch time minutes. And anecdotally, Scal, you know, the 56-7 game to Brooklyn in 2021 when they were down 2-0. The game six against Milwaukee, 46-9-4 in 2022 to force back game seven. You know, that Philly game in game six where Tatum played horrible for like 3.5 quarters, 16 points, 4 of 5 from 3-point range in the fourth quarter of that game seven. And then the game seven, 51-13-5, like outplaying Joel Embiid and James Harden combined, basically. So he's shown that he can do it during stretches. But yeah, you make the right point there. It's just whether it's because the Celtics haven't had to play in a ton of those clutch time situations because they've been blowing teams out or did blow the teams out all season long. There has been, you know, a little bit of rust maybe, or a little bit of inconsistency down the stretch of these games. I do like Tatum's development into a post player this year. He's a much more efficient post player, both passing and scoring. I think that can be a weapon for this team in the playoffs because Tatum's going to have a physical advantage on a lot of the guys that he's matching up with. So I think that's a positive for him.
One thing we just got through a Miami series, which is that's not the Miami Heat who we just played, right? It was like their second strings. And besides Bam Adebayo, who was awesome. But even the game that they beat us, it wasn't a close game. They beat us by 11 and 13. Like they were up, right? So we've yet to have a close game. Hopefully we'll find out about our Celtic team about if we have a close game. But I'm assuming we're going to have one close game in a series coming up. And yeah, will those like sort of demons be exercised, right? Like we have to figure out a way to get Tatum the ball, be organized, have great spacing, go to work. But it was everyone's like, well, we got Miami. We're going to find out about these close games. We didn't have one.
Not so much. And maybe even not so much in this series with Cleveland, if we're being honest. I think the Celtics, you know, have the potential to win a lot of games by double digits in this series. Not to make that a prediction, but I think they can certainly do it. Scout, appreciate it, man. Check out Scout, NBC Sports Boston, NBA Radio. Always good to catch up, man. Thanks for your time.
You got it, Chris.
Are you ready to get serious about your weight loss journey? Tried crash and burn calorie restriction? Considering the invasive strategy of GLP-1 injections like Ozempic? Slow down and consider a safer, easier, and long-lasting solution. Golo is clinically proven to work without the dangerous side effects of injections and fad diets. Golo's release helps your body combat the stress of dieting while controlling cravings and hunger. Minimize muscle loss and feel better with Golo. Just take one Golo Release supplement with each meal and follow the Golo for Life plan. It's an effective and affordable plan to lose weight for good. There are no insurance hoops to jump through. No prescription needed, just sensible, effective weight loss and a healthier lifestyle on your terms. Get started on a healthier, happier, and more energetic you at Golo.com. 5 million people have already discovered a better way to lose weight. Join them and go to Golo.com. That's GOLO.com today.